When you look at Clondalkin today and you see there's no trace of the factory now, and where Dunn Stores is the positioning of where it was, but it was huge, wasn't it?
When I started in it, regulation now, 1954, I think there was 900 people, wasn't it? 900 people. Right. Indirectly be over 1,000, you know. If you bought it in the bike factory and all, they were with the bishops. Like Ken Bishop, he owned the bike factory. But we made paper for the bike factory that converted that paper into cement bikes.
Oh, yes. So there was a lot of paper making going on in there.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
A lot of people, I suppose, would remember the big towering chimney that was there.
That further there, yeah. That's it there.
Tell me about that chimney.
There was two of them there. When I started, there was two chimneys. There was one there somewhere around here.
Okay.
There's the fitting shop there. It was in there, the fitting shop. And that's used, it wouldn't be as high as that, but another one there.
The fitting shop now would have been somewhere right out by the front
yeah,
road here.
There. You couldn't get into the fitting shop from this end.
Okay.
You had to come in. There's the time office. Everyone went through the time office.
Is that directly across the way from McDonald's today now?
McDonald's is up on the same side. Oh, there's the time office. There's a snooker hall here. There's the gates. The gates are there and they're open.
Yeah.
Which was where Tom worked, the offices. It's a snooker hall. See the gates?
Yeah. I see, yes, yeah.
We went into that there and came out here, and this was called the long hall in there. That's the front of the.
But the long
the
hall
center.
That you spoke
this
about, it's
called it the long hall.
And it's.
There was chemicals, drums of chemicals, bales, and all different things.
It was stored
that. You walk down there, you come into the machine at the beaten loft, under the beaten loft. You go under it, the machine was there.
So that's where you worked
in there.
How many machines were there?
There was two there and one further back here, number three.
So they were called one, two, and three.
One, two, and three.
I see.
That was Andy's way of it, yeah.
And then, you know, the big. Where all the waste came out, the big bath that you were talking about.
That was over
here. The drum.
That was over here, this side of the road. See that road there?
That's the main road today now, is it?
That's the main road to Lucan, right. The big drum was somewhere where heavy drum.
Okay, the other side of the road from the factory.
Don Oliver, he called it, yeah.
Yeah.
And the carpenter shop was right behind that. Carpenter's.
And so what were the carpenters doing there? Were they...
Oh, they were... There was four or five helpers.
Yeah.
Different parts, you know, if you wanted carpentry work done or anything like that.
If something it was needed to be done, like the... Something needed to be repaired or fixed, you had your own little workshop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they done it. The fitting shop was there. Carpentry shop was over here. Oh, yeah.
If somebody got hurt or... You know, was there
first aid area?
No, it wasn't. We had a medical.
That was during the day. Ryan.
Again, it was a daytime operation.
Ryan, nobody was supposed to get injured after 5 o'clock.
I told you that story.
We couldn't wait till 9 in the morning. Ah, Ryan.
Was she a busy woman now?
She was, yeah. She was between 9 and 5.
So that was the medical area. And
a doctor.
Was there a doctor there?
Well, Dr. Kay was the medical doctor.
He was
the
medical on the site. He was Michael Devitt's house.
Just working as a in your position as foreman, how many people were you responsible for?
Well, after 5 o'clock in the evening, over 100.
Were you?
Oh, yeah. You'd when you take in Boiler House and Dispatch, even the Groundwood.
Yeah.
We're responsible for the Groundwood, even though we knew nothing about the Groundwood. We're very cinema go down there. Yeah. But you go to the Groundwood, if they were producing pulp that was pumped over to the mill.
Yeah.
They made their own pulp as well.
I see.
For they made their own pulp for the manufacturing of wallpaper and envelopes. Making paper for envelopes. That was our own paper, our own pulp that was made out of logs of timber logs, you know.
And so this, describe that to me now. That's it's a special paper.
Yeah, it was down there. I don't know whether it's in this photograph or not. It's paper that you make. It's very soft wood. I tell you, it's not there.
Hmm.
It was down here.
Yeah.
And they used to pump it up, You say if they were on making a wallpaper paste, or they were making, used to make a number one machine, MG, envelopes, all different weights, different designs and all, it'd be pumped over into the vats on the beaten loft onto the machines. But printing papers, that came in bales from Africa, Sweden, different parts.
Okay, but this material that you're talking about, it's translucent kind of jelly stuff, is it?
Well, it's not jelly. It's like a porridge. It's like
But it's translucent. It's, That must have been messy to work with. I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah, if you get a spill or something like that, but you got used to it. You know, you got it.
And the smell from it. Ooh.
It's different chemicals. If you mix certain chemicals with it, it's used to smell it'd be terrible, you know?
Yeah.
And when it goes stagnant, then you get the smell.
Yes.
You know? Well, but I was telling you about the logs for the groundwood. They used to come in continuous from the docks, remember? One lorry after the other, big, huge, like telegraph poles. And they go through the groundwood, and they be chopped up into pulp, and they make their own pulp.
Yeah, oh, sure, it was great work. There's no doubt about it. When you consider the weight of those big trees coming in,
And they were stacked sky high down there. In the back of that place, what did you call it? The yard.
Yeah.
Then you go across to the groundwood at night time, and you could pass 7 or 8 foxes.
Would the foxes live around the area?
They used to live in these logs. As a matter of fact, there'd be foxes down here at the end of the yard now.
Yeah.
But the dog and paper was known all over the world.
Mm.
If you went to America or anywhere and looked for a job, if you said you worked on the machine, said to that maybe, get a job straight away. It was known all over the world. And there was places that they couldn't believe that the machines would be going 1,000 or 1,100 feet a minute. That's pretty fast. That we hand fed the machines by hand. And throw it up into the cylinders. And that was fed by hand. And there's a lot of places that didn't believe it. Then they brought in the ropes on the end of each cylinder. The ropes used to carry it down. We used to, before the ropes got, we feed by hand.
And accidents?
There was a few accidents, yeah. One man lost his arm. The other man lost his leg. You know.
What about health and safety issues? Was there any such thing?
They had a pass, no. Didn't come in.
Yeah.
And they went to court, of course. He went to court, he shouldn't have done it. What is he supposed to do?
Yeah.
The paper broke, you're not going to close the machine and slow it back to nothing. But it was a funny thing. The most accidents happened when the machines were going slow.
Did they?
Because when you'd be feeding the machine going slow, you actually had to put your hand into the grip if it's something, when it'd be going slow. But when it was going fast, you'd throw it, you didn't have to go into it. You could throw your paper up and the speed would take it up. You know.
Yeah.
But it proved that most accidents, Jerry Burton lost his arm, the machine was nearly stopped.
I know. And you, you survived.
I survived.
No accidents.
A few of them, but no, nothing major. I had a brother had a serious accident down there, and number three machine.
Really?
He lost the side of his face, his arm, different parts, you know. He was very lucky to be alive.
Absolutely, yeah. And who'd look after him then? I mean,
he was brought to hospital.
Yes.
So he was unconscious for 2 weeks.
And did the management look after all of that, or did they?
No.
They didn't?
No. Didn't they?
So there was no such thing as suing the factory?
Oh, he sued the factory all right, but it went to court after 4 years.
Yeah.
But I remember, Jerry, it was only young at the time. I remember Jerry Burton, losing his arm. And the next morning, this Sean Carter says, "How much time did you lose?" Nothing about losing his arm. He wanted to know how much downtime did the machine use. And Crutch Kavanagh threw a big plank in the web to try to stop that, because he was cut down in the drum, you know, in the first cylinder. And he threw a plank in to stop it. Cusey was going to sack him for throwing the plank in.
And was his hand completely severed off?
He was into it. No, he was cut off there. He had to have it on his head because it was burned.
Oh, I see.
And myself one time, I got into trouble for number three machine. There was a big fire in number three machine.
Yeah.
And I called the electrician to knock off all the power because there was hoses being thrown. And I was in trouble over that. You shouldn't have done it. So people could be electrocuted.
Yeah.
But it was proved it was right in the end, you know.
Did you, as the years rolled on, were you there till the end, or
yeah.
did you see the change of management and difficulties in the factory? And
as I told you before, they were given orders, instructions for this, that, and the other, and you knew in your own heart and soul if you went by them that you were going to end up with something that nothing got to do with the product that they wanted. You knew that, you know.
So you think that the new people brought in were responsible for the downturn?
Well, I say it's a lot.
Part of the downturn.
Part of it, yeah. And then, I say the economy of the country had a lot to do with it as well, you know.
Yeah.
And everything got very expensive. Oil and different things, you know, electricity, God. But we shed an awful lot of electricity to the ASB. We used an awful lot of electricity starting up.
Okay.
But when we started up, the turbines used to shed electricity back to the ASB.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So the power...
Yeah.
It was generated backwards again.
You got electricity back.
Isn't that something?
And when there was problems with the ESB, remember, we were used to go blank. And the minute closed, the minute just sit down, stop. You might stop and start, well, you wouldn't stop. You'd be starting them machines, maybe on the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
5 or 6 times. During that shift, that the power would go, the there was problems with DSB when they had I think union problems or something, whatever. They cut you off. You'd start them machines, and it used to cost thousands upon thousands of pounds to start them machines. To start them up was cost a lot of expense. That's why they used to try and keep them going 24 hours a day.
All right, because it was generating itself with the.
Yeah.
So it was important to not to stop those machines.
Oh, yeah. Used to take an awful lot. But the funny thing about it was the stopping of the machines on average happened during the day when all the professors were there. They were causing these stoppages. Because you knew if you... There was a fella came from, Scott was his name.
Oh, yeah.
He hadn't got an idea. It's all he was interested in was I want down to the end, down to the dispatch. And he'd leave instructions to do this. Jesus, you couldn't do that. Have you done that?
Yep.
God knows what you get. And the machine would be closed.
Yeah.
And then he'd come in the next morning, he'd walk around, he'd gone, hide. He was one of the fellas. No idea, a word out the world.
Yeah.
Bill Scott was the name. You remember him?
I do, yeah.
That must have caused a little bit of discomfort, if you like, between yourselves.
Well, most middle management, you know.